Today's episode of the Sports Reporters is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. There's a new boss in town at Buffalo Wild Wings, and he deals in bacon. I mean, if you're going to have a boss, that's like the dream boss, a bacon boss. It's the Bacon Boss Burger featuring bacon three different ways and a blanket of white cheese sauce. And he's joined by other new favorites like the smothered cheese steak quesadilla, sweet chili shrimp, and Alaska cod classic. I don't know how the fish deal got in there, but it did. And so don't worry about it. All pair perfectly with a Sam 76, a fruity ale with the crisp finish of a lager. Hurry in today and try them all before they're gone at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lubig of the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. Welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast, our Monday edition. We do this Monday and Friday. It's nice because you set up the week and you come off of the weekend. And we're coming off a big weekend of NBA action. And, of course, later on this week, the NFL draft, which we will deal with in much detail in just a bit. However, one more time, we are reminded that LeBron James still is singular in his ability to lift his team. And one more time, he did it against what seemed to be a formidable odds if Indiana went up 3-1. Instead, I tend to agree with Charles Barkley if you watch his comments. If Indiana didn't win that game yesterday, they're not winning the series. In my mind, the series ended with that game yesterday. That may be strong, but I think we need to talk about how LeBron still can carry a series.
Mitch, here's the headline on this game. And you saw yesterday what he does if he gets just even minimal help from what is, oh yes, capital S, capital Z, his supporting cast. Kyle Korver only made 4 baskets in that game. He scored 18 points, and that he was enough of a wingman on this night to get them past the Cavaliers, because if he doesn't make those threes, they don't win. What you saw again dramatically, and they could just as easily have won game 3 if Korver had played like this. What you saw is one, how great LeBron is, and two, how little he's working with, but how little he needs to get by.
No, he's the queen of on the chessboard of all time, really, and it is. It amuses me during the courses of seasons when you have to remind people. And he basically did that this year. He reminded people. He sat back. He didn't sit back, but he observed the canonization of Harden, the canonization of even the Greek Freak, all the pretenders to the crown. I'm a history major. I have to throw that one in here. And, you know, he's saying, no. I am still le roi. I am still King James. And he does have the ability to affect the game in every conceivable way.
Didn't you feel, though, Bob, watching this series, I remember when Carl Lewis was at his prime winning all those races, and I once asked him, how is it that you manage to what seems to be come from behind in the middle of 100 meters and still win? And he explained to me, which later became known fact, that it's not that he goes faster than everybody else in the last. It's that everyone else slows down. And so it looks like he's passing. This is always what seems to happen with teams playing against LeBron James. Look at, Mike, we had this discussion last week when I said Indiana could win this series, but they can't take a night off. They can't treat it like, okay, we're up whatever, we're up 1-0, we're up 2-1. Look at Victor Oladipo's number. Now, he is their LeBron James, right? There's no question. He's their guy. 5-for-20. Tell me any night that LeBron James goes 5-for-20.
What do you mean doesn't by happen. Take a night? But, Mitch, tell me, explain to me what you mean
they played,
by take
they
a night
played,
off. They
played
they
knuckle,
their asses off
no,
last
but
night.
In,
they
in
lost.
In my mind, they played some knucklehead basketball when they needed to play sharper. Their offense was badly run. They had way too many bad shooting at the beginning, and they falling behind and then coming clawing your way back from 17 points is not a formula to beat Cleveland. But they're at home, Mike. They're at home. They're up 2-1 at home. That's when you have to put the dagger in. And instead, it's a close game, but LeBron somehow wins it. And this is how his teams tend to win these things in the long run.
But when you look at last night's game, okay, and we talked a fair amount about this the other day. There are times when the Cavs now look like the thing that we always talk about, that he went to the Y and found four pretty good guys and is trying to compete for an NBA championship. But again, you know, they can't keep people off the boards. You know, the disappearing Tristan Thompson, that's maybe we'll figure that out. Maybe historians will figure that out. But Korver gives them, again, 4 3-point baskets. And to me, that's the difference of the game. Mitch, they won on a night when Kevin Love shot 2 for 10 himself and scored 5 points and played 29 minutes. And the crazy thing about it is they could still lose the series, but if the Wiz ever beat the Raptors, all of a sudden they're going to think they're back in play again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned Korver, and give him credit. He missed his first four. But when they needed it, he made it. This is Kyle Korver's game. This is who he is. It's why when they got him, and we remember when they got him as a floor spreader and as an outlet for LeBron's brilliant passing, you know, this was I deemed to be a rather ideal guy to be a wingman. And there's nothing that we're shocked about when Korver does things like this. He's been around and around now. He's over 30, and he's a veteran pro, and this is what he does. He's one of the great open shooters, distant shooters of all time.
Yeah. Well, my point about Indiana is when you're trying to knock off, you know, the Kings and the champions, you just have to be excellent all the time. And look at their starters. I mentioned Oladipo, 5 for 20. Collison, 5 for 14. Bogdanovich, who had that amazing night the other night, 4 for 13. You're at home. You're up 2-1. That, you can't have that game. Now, I'm not saying it's their fault. I mean, obviously, Cleveland played some good defense. And Mike, what you're talking about with Korver, well, now I promise you, next game, Korver won't be a factor. It'll be J.R. Smith. It'll be you know, Kevin Love. But that's all, as you pointed out right at the start, astutely, you give LeBron James one of those guys per night that, you know, throws in the 18 or 20 points along with his mandatory 30 to 40, and they're probably going to win.
And Mitch, here's the other thing about this game. It's not like the Cavs brought their A. They shot 44%. The Pacers shot 43%. And they once again played a extremely sketchy third period. And when you look at this team, and you look at the way it was slapped together once and then again at the trade deadline, and you see all, Bob, how many easy baskets are the Pacers still getting? Because if LeBron doesn't keep guys off the boards, Nobody keeps them off the boards.
They don't have that deterrent, no. No, they don't. And what can we say? They're flawed. I mean, and they're flawed, but they ultimately they have the answer, and, you know, and he is an answer.
And by the way, let's go to the play at the end of the game, because even though Chris Webber was clearly watching the wrong movie, right. Why would anybody have thought that wasn't going to be a foul on Lance Stephenson for a WWE takedown? And Bob, you have much more historical perspective on this than I do. Lance Stephenson is a very talented player. I was shocked today to discover he's still only 27 years old. Is a very talented player who's like the hockey guy who comes over the sides to try to stir things up. He even got under LeBron's skin last night, even though you can't allow him to walk him back to the bench like that and then be shocked that he shoves him out of the way. But that was a takedown. That was always a foul. If you were watching Kenny Maurer, which I was, he had his hand up from the start calling it a foul on Stephenson.
Yeah. Well, you know, once again, not once again, but just people should know, there are people, when people get labeled and targeted, you know, officials, damn it, they do know, and they are ready. And this guy's got, you know, this guy's got
priors. He's got priors.
He's got many priors. Thank you. Yeah, that's right. And that shouldn't be, so we shouldn't be shocked that he gets properly chastised, shall we say, by the official.
Well, they have now until Wednesday to get it together in Cleveland. That's good for Cleveland, gives them more time, and they're at home. I happen to agree with Barkley's comments on this, that I thought the series, that it was, if Indiana could have won that game, I think it could have, you know, the weight of coming back again from a 3-1 deficit in the first round would have been something that even LeBron and them might not have overcome. But I think in a toss up, you got three games left. Whoever wins two, I just don't see Cleveland. Yeah, they're just going to advance, and that was Indiana's shot in my view last night. And they end up losing by four and telling themselves they came close. And if only this, and if only that. But that's the way it always goes when you're taking on a team.
But
like
they're
LeBron.
Not the better team in this series.
Well, I mean, they're not, but they could be,
not.
Don't you think? But don't
they well,
are
been.
They? But are they? I mean,
no,
we spend so much time talking about better team or better superstar. Better team, I think, if Indiana have plays at its best, it can beat Cleveland 4-3 in a 7-game series, but it doesn't play at its
Mitch,
best.
Mitch, how
all
many
the time?
Times have we talked about the fact that there's nothing harder in this generation in the NBA than getting four games off of LeBron James, even now? And here's the thing about LeBron, and then we'll move on to the other games because there's a lot of rich, good stuff going on in the first round of the NBA playoffs, okay? On a night, I was joking. I was watching the game with Zach Lubega last night. He said, how many is he going to score tonight? And I jokingly said, 60. But he never plays that game. He only took 22 shots last night. Even now, with this group around him, he is an incomparable, consummate team player. And you know, Bob has watched basketball longer than I have. My first job was 100 years ago covering the Knicks in New York. I love watching this guy play ball.
Yeah. Well, I've said continually, I totally love him. People ask about the LeBron Michael comparison all the time. It's what we do, and my cop out answer is yeah. I'd take Michael for my life because of his ruthless competitiveness, unmatched and unexceeded. I'll put it that way. But I'd rather watch LeBron.
Bob, let me just say, I ran this by Mitch the other day. Mitch and I talked about this, and I will ask you this question because. I'm always calling my sons, but Chris Lubick asked me this question. It's a good question. What if there had been no Michael? How would we look? Said, what kind of praise would be lavished on LeBron if he wasn't compared to the to this impossible mythology and standard of Michael Jordan?
Well, that's a great question, but you know that. Well, no, there would be no other legitimate standard of comparison stylistically, because what we're talking about is the multiplicity of skills with a body.
Yes.
He's got Karl Malone's body with the the speed of you know, and that unimaginable power and speed. There had been a couple of things, like, you know, who was built like this, but you know, I mean, talk about the embryonic version. George McGinnis had a body like that and did things that were uncommon for the time with the body that he had. But you know, it's remote and completely laughable to put those two in the same sentence. But that's what would be searching at that level to find somebody that had the capability with the that he has with the body that he has.
You're so right. I remember George McGinnis's shoulders. They look like exactly like LeBron's without the tattoos. But once again, we note he continues to go through postseason uninjured, unimpeded. He doesn't slow down. He doesn't get ankle twists. It's just incredible. Let's jump over to the Boston-Milwaukee series. To me, this is fascinating. On the one hand, and Bob, you've watched them all year, but on one hand, I watch the Celtics and I go, oh my God, when I watch Jason Tatum or some of the other guys that
Jaylen
they have
Brown.
On there,
Jaylen
Brown
was,
and his game, and I go, they're gonna get Kyrie Irving and
Gordon Hayward
back. Gordon Hayward. Yeah. I mean, they're off the team and they're playing this well. On the other hand, it's a 2-2 series, and obviously the Greek Freak has the key play at the end, the tip in, but he played well. I don't know. What do you make of where this is going here? To me, I watch it and I say the Celtics are better coached. They play a better team game. But it is 2-2 after four.
Yeah, it's 2-2. The Celtics did not; they were not competitive in Game 3 at all, and then they got down 20 with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter yesterday. But they've been a team making these rousing comebacks all year long. What I make of it is, in that third game, the great asset that people in the league have talked about all year with the. Bucks was on display, and that their quote unquote guys length and their ability to defend with it, coming off the bench with a Thon Maker who's 7-1 and lengthy to go along with the Greek Freak and Henson who when he's around and others. I mean they're they're very modern.
And Bobby, isn't it amazing? Because the thing that distinguishes the Celtics defense is their length and athleticism, and they're going up against a team that is even longer and more athletic than they are.
This series is playing out the way that if you had seen them play in the regular season, you would have expected it to play out. The difference, of course, being that depending on who was available to the Celtics at the time, I can't tell you where Irving was at any given point in time against the Bucks. They've been able to impose their will, the Bucks have, on the Celtics with this high length, starting with Antetokounmpo, who the Celtics have an extremely hard time guarding. Not that they're alone, but they really do. And it's fun. I thought it was a toss-up because of the Celtics' status going in, their physical situation. To me, this was I don't care who was two and who was seven, this was a toss-up series, and it's playing out to be a toss-up series, and I absolutely cannot predict how it's going to play out.
I don't know that I've ever seen back-to-back playoff games with, 13 and 14 blocks? And eight of those blocks yesterday came off the bench, you know, and Maker and Parker are off the bench blocking eight shots. It does change the game. I want to also ask you, Bob, again, I always defer, Mike, as we know, Bob, because Bob's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, because sometimes that commercial, Bob, life comes at you fast. Sometimes, even though I was covering the NBA when I was like 12 years old, I just say, boy, I wish Bob could explain to me what I just saw.
So here's what I'd like to ask Bob. Is it me, or is the physical play in these playoffs intensified from what it has been? I know we always complain about refs and ticky-tack call. There, you cannot take a shot in these playoffs without somebody physically on top of you, and they're letting these guys go at it. It seems to be across the board in these series. I don't recall.
Ever since I've been around, the assumption and I remember. It's very interesting you bring this up because what Mike says, what he said, because my first playoffs coverage involving the Boston Celtics wasn't until my third year covering them, and that was the 71-72 season. And I remember having a sit-down with Tom Heinsohn at the time, getting a tutorial on the playoffs from him and the difference, and he was explaining the difference, and basically every possession matters, everything is more intense, everything is just ratcheted up. Now, he told me that 46 years ago, and I think nothing has ever changed. I mean, he came into a league and found that out in 1956. I came into the circumstance and found it out in 1972, and we're still talking about this aspect of the playoffs. Yes, everything is heightened, and this is the real deal here. This is,
and Bob, you know what's amazing, and we lived through a lot of this. The difference now is that they can play a grinding defensive game now, and it still ends up 104, 102, when in the old days it could be 79-77 or 81-80. But it's funny. The Celtics don't turn the ball over. At least they didn't turn the ball over yesterday. And Bob, I'm trying to remember because sometimes these games do come at you fast. There was a terrible turnover with about 40 seconds left.
Jaylen Brown. There was a back-to-back turnovers. The Bucks turned it over. Celtics up one. And here comes they turn it over. And Brown.
And they got a chance to do a two-for-one, Bobby. That's the
Brown's,
thing.
Brown's got a chance. He made the decision to go for it, and he lost it. The prudent thing probably you can say would have been to pull it out, get settled down, get something out of it. You had the lead. But this was a dagger thing if he goes down and scores. Brad Stevens went on the record to exonerate Brown, to exonerate him, not to chastise him for being youthfully imprudent or anything else. He's saying, we don't mind the aggression there. What he really believes, I don't know.
Yeah, but Bob, I'm telling you, in real time, I'm watching him cross half court and I said to Zach, get a good shot here, okay? Because then whatever happens, happens, and he took it to the middle and rushed it, and the ball's going the other way, and before long, Giannis is making an By the way, Mitch, I don't know if you were watching at this point. Did you see his dunk yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God.
I watched
God.
The whole game. I mean, Freak is... sometimes nicknames are like, where'd they come up with that one? That nickname is perfect.
Oh, my Lord.
You're seeing some stuff here that just
Mitch,
is,
don't
is
you agree that that...
Different body.
Every once in a while, you'll be watching a game, and you'll get what I call a whoa. That was a whoa moment.
Yeah, He had the face to. All right, now here's my next question as we move through the playoffs. We keep talking about Toronto. I know when we probably have some Canadian listeners and some fans of the Raptors, and they're probably saying of us, you guys are so unfair to the Raptors. You never talk about them. Why aren't you throwing them in the mix? Look at, they got the best record in the East. Here's why. After four games, they're tied with the number eight seed. Yeah. And John Wall looked like he could take that team apart by himself yesterday. And I don't understand the inconsistencies of the Toronto Raptors. How do you win, you know, almost 60 games in a season and you can't put away the Washington Wizards?
Well, number one, the Wizards are better than an eight seed, and
you
they played
bet.
Much of the,
you
so
bet
much
they
of the
are.
Season without be, without the Wall. You saw yesterday what John Wall can be. He wasn't perfect. He was 10 for 24, but he did throw 14 assists on top of the 27 points. He had his big moments. They're better than that. They're just so don't even. I'll tell you what, the whole East. I think the three of us would really be in general agreement. I'm betting the whole East 1-8. You could. You might be able to throw that proverbial blanket over him, and based on forget about whether who was two and who was seven and who was three and who was four and even in this case who was one. I don't think this had the earmarks of a 1-8 at all. I think this had the earmarks of a 4-5 series to start with.
And you know what, you're right, Bob. When they are healthy, this is an immensely talented team with an immensely talented backcourt. And by the way, let me just ask you again, because sometimes, you know, I do get confused. Well, what is the role of an NBA official during these games, whether they're in the regular season at the playoffs? Because sometimes I forget.
Well, you know my rule. Why every official should have to answer the quiz before every game he officiates at every
level.
Why am I here? Why am I here? And you are here, saith I, to adjudicate the smooth flow of the game, not to demonstrate that you know every last semicolon in the stupid rule book and misapply it at the wrong moment. All right.
And Bobby Bradley Beal was screwed out of that game yesterday. Oh, he's standing there with his arms up, and they foul him out, and he's having the playoff game of his life.
I'll tell you, if in fact there isn't a review of that in the NBA office by the poobahs on fishheading, which winds up in an excoriation of that official and a fine for utter lack of common sense, not to mention. It's just beyond imagination that you could make a call like that at that moment, and you being given the privilege of refereeing an NBA game. That was and I had no dog in this hunt whatsoever. I'm watching.
Me neither. But that kid got
outrageous.
Screwed. Yeah, that kid got screwed yesterday. Oh my God.
A nod to. I don't think this is going to change the series one way or the other. But it was nice to see San Antonio put up a fight and at least push this thing back out. It was great to see Manu Ginobili have one last hurrah in a fourth quarter. And you know, if they're going to go out, as everybody expects that they will, don't let them go out on the road. Let them go out and up in Golden State and recognize that the torch has been passed officially and time has to go. I don't know if Pop is going to make that trip out there, but it would have been. I don't know what the word would be, but unfitting. I guess, for San Antonio to bow out without him on the bench, at home, in front of their own fans. So they pulled one out for old time's sake, and I, for one, was happy to see
Mitch,
it.
Mitch, to me, they honored, for those, whatever it was in basketball time, for those last half hour of real time yesterday, they honored everything they have represented in this sport for two decades, okay, with various cast of characters. And they're looking, Mitch, you're right, they're looking at a game where they know they're going to go out to Oakland and lose game five. So they're playing himself into like a fighter knowing, okay, yeah, if I do get through the 11th round, I'm going to get knocked out in the 12th round anyway. And everything they have been and everything they have meant to this sport and the beautiful game of basketball they have played was on display yesterday, even though they have no hope of winning this series. And it made you appreciate what they've been, and it made you wonder what a series like this might have looked like if Kawhi Leonard hadn't wandered off the reservation this way, if they hadn't been visited by the terrible tragedy of Aaron Popovich dying. Oh no, to me, if you love basketball, The end of, again, without any dog in this fight, the end of that basketball was the Spurs basically, and Mano especially, saying, this is who I am. This is who we've always been.
And I read where he and Parker now have played more playoff games together as teammates than anybody in history. And I think we have seen the end of that, too. Because in an era where the storyline is who's on whose team this year, and where's LeBron going this year, and who's going to manipulate a new trio. And look at between Oklahoma City, Houston, Cleveland, you know, Golden State last year with Durant going out there. The storyline in the NBA is who's shifting on the board. Here's San Antonio with two guys who played 132 playoff games together or something like that. You're not going to see a team like that anymore. You're not going to see, they're the vestiges of you know, what's left when there were a couple more characters who have been there for a long time too. I guess for guys like us who have covered teams like this for a while, it's
hey Bob,
nostalgic.
Hey yeah. Bob, one thing I was thinking watching this game yesterday is Steph Curry's there in street clothes, and this is Klay Thompson's chance to be a Splash Brother again, Bobby. It's a chance to be a Splash Brother, except it was like a little, just dropping a pebble into a pond, because he shot 4 for 16, and he could have saved them. He could have made this a sweep yesterday.
Yeah, you know, it's always nice to remember. He's the one that scored 37 points in a period. Yep. It would have been nice. I echo this sentiment about the valor displayed by that team, and particularly by one of my all-time favorite players, Manu Ginobili. And since the start, at some time, I don't know when it was, maybe a month ago, I said, oh, man, God, they're bringing three Hall of Famers, veteran guys off the bench right now. It's just... I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. Maybe the early 60s Celtics, which had an abundance of Hall of Famers. But other than that, it's been a long time. And because I'm concluding Gasol, and I firmly believe that all three of them are going to be in the Hall of Fame.
All right, listen, we're going to stay on the NBA for one more second. But before we get to the grandeur of Anthony Davis's game, today's episode of the Sports Reporters is sponsored by Mattress Firm. Everybody knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches longer, like Giannis's length at Mattress Firm. So shop at see what I did there? So shop at America's neighborhood mattress store. It's a true home run. See, Giannis probably didn't care about that. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com to see what deals are happening. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial. So the Portland Trailblazers could use this, because they got 120 free nights coming up to ensure perfection and a 120-night low price guarantee, so you know you pay the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com and use code PODCAST10 for 10% off. The code is only valid through May 2nd, so don't miss out. Get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow, only at Mattress Firm. Mitch Albom, who would have thought that as we're having this conversation on the last week of April on the Sports Reporters podcast, that there would be one team getting ready to play the second round, and it would be the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, I know. I did not see that coming. And, you know, I perhaps Bob, who watches a little bit more basketball than me, did. But, you know, you get some stellar play from the right guys at the right time. They're very impressive. I you know, how far can they go? I don't know. I think, you know, the West is awful tough to keep advancing. But I'm impressed with what I've seen. And Bob, did you see this all year?
I never did. I thought this had a classic 4-5 aura of a seven-game series. Remember how well Portland played down the stretch? And then, of course, this whole saga of the Pelicans playing and the way that Davis became a true and a relentless superstar in the absence of Boogie Cousins. Which
don't
is,
you think that very, made him better, Bob? Don't
oh,
you think
it loans
that...
it clearly, I mean, how much cause and effect do we need, Michael, to see that...
Right.
That I mean, how much do we need to see that this wasn't the idea, you know, that Davis is liberated again? But let's just, I'm glad it was, just talking about Anthony Davis for a second. Yeah, at the end, he played so well in the second half of the year, and his name was injected finally into the MVP discussion.
Oh, yeah.
By some. And I just, and of course, there is the current wonder that is the Greek Freak, but come on. The prize 25-year-old monster of the league is Anthony Davis.
What about Jrue Holiday?
His entire career is under the radar for me, you know?
Mr. Rondo, Bob, 16 assists the other day.
Rondo was playing probably the best he's played since, 2008. Although he had a run, of course, with great and ponderable last year was what would have happened if he hadn't gotten hurt against the Celtics. I understand that. He was playing very well against them. But this is Rondo back being the Rondo. I mean, it's been a very strange up and down career, but he's a dangerous, dangerous force.
They're just fun to watch. Those three guys are going to give them a chance in the next round. I honestly believe that.
Well, Davis and Holiday were shot like 57% for the series. And, you don't see anything north of 50 anymore, So, were they just matched up against the right team in Portland, and is it going to change in the next matchup? That's what basketball's all about, is matchups. I do want to ask this one question. I read this headline, and I was scratching my head, that Houston is feel like Harden and their coach are going, well, we're out of sync. We're bad. We're terrible. This is awful. And I'm thinking, okay, for those who haven't read this story, their claim is, but by clinching so early, and having to go the rest of the season. they had to turn off their intensity. Aww. and the thing that made Houston up to that point is now somehow gone, missing, and they're searching for it. They look fairly good to me so far, but I don't know.
Mitch,
if it's just generating
somebody. Didn't somebody on the sports reporters, one of the charter members of the sports report, I forget. Everybody's talking at once, and who knows who said what? Didn't somebody say this was going to be a 6-game series, Bob?
I was just thinking about that, Mike. So nice of you to remind our audience that I did say there would be 2-2 going back home to Houston, at which point Houston would assert itself and it would be a 6-game series. So I'm not going to run away from that. I never would have believed, Michael, although they lost the game, that Towns would have had single-digit games to start the series.
I know.
Wow.
Are we not all in agreement that attention better be paid, whatever happens in this series, yeah, attention better be paid to the Minnesota Timberwolves? Because
you know what's interesting? Yes, the answer is yes. And how many teams are we saying that about at this moment in history?
Right. Yes.
Certainly the team that is up 3-1 in the East, the only one that's up 3-1, is. And how about the Boston Celtics? And how about them Bucks with that young group? I think it's really good for the league that we can say that about, three or four teams or maybe more.
And Mitch, yeah, despite all the basketball you watched yesterday, are you not engaged by game four between the Rockets and the T-Wolves on Monday night?
I still disagree with Bob. I don't think it's going six. I think it's five. But, why quibble over a game here or there?
Did you see that, Bob? He's always saying, Bob, explain basketball to me. And now he's going against you, Bob. You hear what he did there?
You have to take a stand. Sometimes you take on the king and you see what happens. If he chops your head off, okay, fine.
He's like Lance Stevenson, he's the king. Bob, he's trying to get in your face, Bob, isn't he?
When he starts blowing in my ear, we'll call a timeout.
Okay, you let me know when that happens, all right? All right, before we get to the NFL draft, today's episode of the Sports Reporters is also sponsored by Freshly. It's the easiest and most convenient way to eat healthy no matter what life throws your way. So even if you get stuck at work late, you can come home to a delicious dinner cooked by a chef. Yes, a chef. No more worrying about having to figure out what you got left in the fridge and no mess to clean up afterwards. Freshly chefs source the finest all-natural ingredients and work with nutritionists to ensure their meals are healthy as possible. You want a few examples? I'll give you a few examples. How about steak peppercorn? How about grilled chicken risotto? How about Southwest chicken bowl or the home-style meatloaf, all right? Are you getting hungry? That's the point. The best part about Freshly is the number of comfort meals they currently have that are also super healthy. And you can customize your weekly meals by their constantly changing, rotating menu of more than 30 chef-crafted options. No weekly commitment. You get deliveries when you want them. Check out this week's menu created by Freshly Chefs and get $25 off your first order of 6 chef-cooked dinners plus free shipping by going to Freshly.com/sportsreporters. You'll feel so relieved to come home to a chef-cooked meal every night with Freshly. Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $25 off your first order. I've been meaning to ask you guys this about the NFL draft. We have had multiple discussions about it even leading up. And, of course, it's Thursday and it's finally here. And I do believe that Mike and I talked about this, Bob, on Friday when you weren't here about how excited we actually are to watch the first hour of this thing. I generally don't care much about the draft, but it's fascinating to see how the first 5-6 picks are going to play out and which quarterback is going to end up where.
Yeah, it is. And also, who's going to be number – regardless of who the first quarterback is, what will the Giants do right away? You know, because – you know, there sits the Barkley, there sits Chubb. They have needs that Trent how much Michael's good friend Ernie Accorsi, what influence is he going to have on the Giants?
Oh, none, Bob. Bob, honest to God, none. I talked to him the other day. He's not involved with this. He hasn't studied these players the way he did. Let me throw this at you guys, okay? Because I wrote about this yesterday in the Daily News. The Browns have the first pick and the fourth pick. And let's say they like all these quarterbacks, but they don't love any of them. What if the Browns take Barkley, knowing they can still get a quarterback at 4, and knowing that Gettleman, the new Giants general manager, is making sounds like he might not take one of these quarterbacks. And there has even been the suggestion now that if Barkley comes off the board, that he might trade out of that pick to see. Oh no, Mitch and I talking about Bob. You can't miss the first hour of this.
Wait,
draft.
Let me ask you about that scenario you just threw out there. If Cleveland really decides, okay, we're going to go with Barkley, wouldn't they trade? Wouldn't they trade with the Jets or somebody else if you know, who's desperate for a quarterback?
But the Jets are going to get one at 3, Mitch. They're going to get a quarterback.
Yeah, but they may not get the one that they want. I mean, would that be safe? I guess maybe not because the Giants could take Barkley ahead of them then.
Mitch, here's the thing. And again, I did talk to Ernie just about the draft in general. And he did. He said this is the most excited he's been about a draft since he retired. There's a lot of strategic lying that goes on at this time of year. A lot of strategic lying. But every sign that we're getting in New York is that the Jets have fallen head over heels in love with the Heisman Trophy winner. Not the last one, this one. Baker Mayfield, despite the fact that he's, I love when I see this, 6 feet and 5/8 of an inch tall. And they know all the history on that. So I don't think the Browns or the Giants are going to take Baker Mayfield ahead of the Jets. So the Jets have already moved up. They're in good shape. They're right where they want to be.
Here's my question that I wanted to pose to you guys, and then we can talk about the specifics of the draft a little bit more. When did the draft and why did the draft become this ridiculous enterprise? You know, we lament that it is, that it's 3 days long, that you know, the guys who pick these things can have jobs 365 days a year just talking about the draft, that the day after the draft is over, there will be a Mel Kiper prediction for the 2019 draft. Can you explain to me how this thing blew up into this entity? Because we're all old enough to remember then the draft was done in a single day and you were done with it. It never created this. What engendered this magnitude?
Well, you touched it. It's ESPN. It's the ESPNization of the world, and who was Mel Kiper Jr. before, you know, 30 years ago? That's all. It's the same with college basketball. So much that's happened in college basketball as a result of the ESPN coverage. And when I just say ESPN, it means all the people that have responded to ESPN with the formation of the individual networks. So such a thing as the NFL Network, which didn't exist 30 years ago, or MLB or NBA, NHL, all these things. It all began with, you know, with that little operation in Bristol, Connecticut in 1979.
Yeah, but Bob, not everything that ESPN throws up against the wall sticks just because they want to make it into something. There has to be an audience for it.
I don't have any other answer.
No, it kept building and building. Mitch, when I was talking to Ernie the other day, I remembered that in a 2004 draft that had Roethlisberger, Eli, and Philip Rivers in it, when Ernie swung a trade that is as important a trade as any New York team has ever made in anything, including Dave DeBuscher with the old Knicks, I was at Yankee Stadium on a Saturday afternoon. I talked to him after he'd made the trade for him. So it was still a Saturday afternoon thing in 2000. So that's only 14 years ago.
Yeah.
I think it's maybe the fantasy league ization of all sports.
Yeah.
Although there's really no fantasy to play in draft. You know, there's no actual stats, but it's that same mentality of let's comb through statistics. Let's look at guys' 40s times and their bench presses and their jumps. And no matter how many articles, and these never get the play that Mel Kiper's mock drafts do or anybody else's. I mean, if you comb through ESPN, not to pick on our friends at ESPN, but they are, you can get this on SI.com and all the rest, but there's like 40 mock drafts by 40 different guys in the insider in ESPN. But I think it has to do with, you know, if we put something geeky out there and then we promote it and we start televising the combine and we start televising, you know, telling everybody how many bench presses this guy did or this guy didn't, we can create drama where there is none. But yet there's always an article, and I always look for this, and it's like one of these, that comes out and says, by the way, here's the history of first round and second round draft picks and what difference they made and how many guys ended up being all pro from late in the second round or third round, how many Tom Brady's there are in the league. And it screams that this is not an exact science, that most of the time you end up overhyping or getting some things wrong, and that the third round can be as important as the first round. It doesn't matter. It doesn't slow anybody's interest down. It just kind of still hypes the fuel of this bloated, drawn out, incredibly intense event for something that is essentially watching other people shop. Which is what I always show the trade. It's like going to the mall. You don't have any money, but you watch everybody else have. Ooh, pick that. Pick that. That's a good one. That's a good coat. Buy that car. That's good. Yeah. And then what does it mean to you? Nothing.
What's interesting about the draft to me is that, okay, people are entitled to have an opinion. People, average fan opinion, has maybe cares about college football a lot, has opinion about these quarterbacks because they've actually watched them play, has an opinion about Saquon Barkley because you've actually watched them play, but they have no right to an opinion about any lineman, any defensive back, and they constitute so much of the draft. So, you know, that's the other part, is that absent the skill positions, people have no right to an opinion about anything, so all they know is what they're being told by the Kipers and the McShays of the world. So I find that fascinating.
And you know, the interesting thing about this draft to me is that something, again, Ernie, who's just one of the smartest people I know about football in general and sports, every team seems to have one quarterback that they like better than the other, including Lamar Jackson. Some like Darnold. Some like Josh Allen, the kid from Wyoming. Some like Josh Rosen. Here's a stat. Steve Cerby wrote about this in the New York Post yesterday. Of the 54 quarterbacks drafted in the first round in the last 20 years, five of them, Peyton, Eli, Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, and Joe Flacco, have won a Super Bowl. Of the 33 quarterbacks drafted in the top 10, just two, the Manning boys, have won a Super Bowl. So this quarterback thing is one of the great crapshoots in sports because, as Ernie says, there are no 100% guarantees.
None.
Plus, it also means that there's more to the and there's more to the sport than just the quarterback, as much as we sanctify that position.
All right, let's turn our attention to baseball, Mr. Ryan, and I will pose it this to you. Having watched the Red Sox get off to that 17-2 start, I saw them play in person on opening day. Until this weekend, it was one of the two games they had lost. There is something happening in Houston that reminds people that as great as the Red Sox have looked so far, up until the no-hitter, the Houston Astros are like still to me like a combination of the Warriors and the Rockets and they haven't even kicked it up a notch yet, and they're already looking like the best team in the world again.
Well, yes, and once again, the thing about baseball is the length of the season. I won't use that M word or that S word, but you know, the season.
Bob, it's a marathon and not a sprint? Is that what you were about to say?
Some have been known to say that, and. you know, here the Astros are nicely situating themselves at 16-7, which would be considered to be a very nice start if it weren't for the fact that the Red Sox are 17-4. Now, everything you said, what's to disagree with? People should have certainly not worried about them, and I wasn't worried about them. I respect them, and they're the team to beat. Yes, absolutely.
And Bobby, Garrett Cole. Garrett Cole has turned out to be exactly what everybody thought when the Astros made the trade with the Pirates, who says, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Pitching wise, you know, people are going to feel like they added Durant to that starting rotation because,
yeah.
Bob, here's the thing. When I look at that rotation, and the two guys at the bottom of it aren't discussed nearly enough. Charlie Morton is carried out of last October and in November. He's what everybody thought he was going to be when he was a kid. And Lance McCullers, there's not a staff in baseball that wouldn't want Lance McCullers Jr.
No, it's a terrifically organized and constructed team. There's no question. And well run and at the top and well managed. And absolutely. I mean, there's no question that they're still the creme de la creme until proven otherwise. Red Sox got this gaudy start. It was well earned. There was nothing fluky about the way they did it. They did it in the conventional way. As good baseball people would say, they pitched good, they hit good, and they caught the ball. That's a good way to, you know, that those three things carry you a long way. Now a little reality setting in. And I let's get right to the no-hitter, because here's the Red Sox. They're coming out of a series where they outscored the Angels 27-3. They pound the A's on opening night, and they're leading in every offensive category known to man, just about.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then this is baseball. Why I can never stress so enough the beauty of it, the vagary of it, the random nature of things, and they get no-hitted, and
yep.
They hadn't been no-hitted in 25 years. Chris Bossio, and they get no-hitted now. We can have the discussion as to whether it was a no-hitter, but it's in the books, Michael. And even if they didn't get no-hitted, they got one-hitted, and it was an infield, you know, debatable play. So it's just baseball. I just find it. And then they didn't swing the bats particularly well day after either. So who knew that they were going to get stymied by the Oakland A's?
I know Benintendi sounded like he was whining afterwards, Bob, but he did have a point. And then, by then, the umpires are doing everything except hire skywriters to act as if they wanted a no-hitter, too. Don't you think it's time, by the way, to be more sensible about what constitutes the baseline? Don't we have to move it off to the side a little more, Bobby?
And there's two different rules they can go to, and who establishes the baseline, the runner or the fielder. And my head was spinning with all these explanations. All I know is he went about a foot outside to the right of the line, and I don't see how that constituted being out of the baseline. But regardless, that's too bad. It's not the only tainted no-hitter. There's one in New York we could discuss. I don't want to dredge up Johan Santana, but, well, you know. But anyway, yeah. So anyway, back to the Red Sox.
Bob, all right. And,
go ahead.
And there's something else that is fascinating. I wrote a column about it on Sunday for MLB.com. Giancarlo Stanton has come to New York, and he is currently hitting 185. Now, do I think he's going to do this? No. And Bobby, if you know this kid's track record, he has gone through some profound slumps.
Yeah.
Sometimes in midseason where you felt like he struck out for an entire month. Okay. But what he is going through is what almost, Reggie struggled for different reasons. His wounds were self-inflicted because of the straw that stirs the drink story in Sport Magazine. A-Rod, his first month, he hit like 268, which compared to what is going on with Stanton right now, looks Ruthian in comparison. Tino Martinez is a classic example of what I'm talking. It's the newbie thing. It's the newbie Yankee thing, because he comes in with the normal pressures of becoming a Yankee and the big city and the stadium and all that, but he is replacing Donald Arthur Mattingly. Okay. And I think at one point he was hitting like 0.88 his first April. The people in New York are not only booing him the way they booed Stanton, but he ends up being a big player on a team that wins the world. I think he ended up with like 25 and 116 that year, mm-hmm. became a mainstay on the last great Yankee dynasty. Bob, the one thing that has surprised me about this is that they were so quick to boo him on a 5-strikeout day at the home opener. I never tell fans, Bobby, who to cheer or boo. I don't. They have so few rights left that they can cheer or boo whoever they want to. But I did think as it's the cranky Yankee fans were doing that.
Well,
come on.
I mean, there's, you know, but Mike, there's a hat trick and there's the golden sombrero and then there's, you know, whatever you call this. I don't know. Did they come up with a name for it?
I don't know.
Five. And you know, yeah. I mean, that's a bit extreme, and to do it twice in a short, brief period of time is even more amazing. I know, to a lesser extent, our 200 miles, 20 miles north, there's a pressure to perform that sometimes some people just don't fit. We've had guys that never got it. Edgar Renteria, oh my God, never got it. Carl Crawford being exhibit A, B, C,
oh,
D,
boy.
And E.
Oh boy.
And
yeah.
Then he's out there whining and completely constructing a fiction about his experience in Boston, a complete fabrication of the way he was treated, which was people tried to give him the benefit of the doubt as long as possible. I'm telling you, he's manufactured a grievance that doesn't exist, and then he ended it by botching a play in Baltimore and that was the nail in the coffin of them not going to the playoffs that year. Oh my God. Anyway, yeah, he did.
All right, Bob, let me ask you this. But before we get to our party shots, let me just ask you this about Carl Crawford. Is the contract the Red Sox gave him, and that was Theo, by the way, is it worse than the one Brian Cashman gave to Jacoby Ellsbury?
I think yes, but that you know, you can't go wrong either way. But you know, and I tell you, I loved Ellsbury here for the most part. I'm surprised at this the way that this thing is. But
Bob,
one thing I'm not surprised about
now.
Mike is this. Mike, the guy is. To borrow a phrase from your wonderful friend, the old coach of the many teams, Mr. Parcells, you don't make the club from the tub, and this guy was born in the tub, one way or the other. A lot of it,
Bobby.
And he was chastised. You know, he was criticized in Boston, supposedly internally for not being. And I just think the guy is incredibly unlucky. I really do. I don't think he's soft at all. I think he's just phenomenally unlucky.
Bob, I will leave you this with Jacoby Ellsbury. He is now getting hurt while he's on the DL. He gets hurt actually while he's disabled. He becomes more disabled while he's disabled. Okay, today's episode of the Sports Reporters is also brought to you by Away, which is where, by the way, Yankee fans want Jacoby Ellsbury to go. Away was founded by two friends from New York who found themselves at JFK with dead phones, delayed flights, and a bright idea. Luggage with power. Thus, the Away carry-on was born. It really is the perfect luggage. Inspired by true travel stories, we asked thousands of people how they pack. They asked them why they travel and what bugs them most about their luggage. Then they designed a bag that solved a few old problems like sticky wheels and a few new ones like dead cell phones. Away uses high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. You can choose from a variety of colors and four sizes, the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, and the large for extended stays. All suitcases are made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance, and very lightweight. The interior features a patent-pending compression system helpful for overpackers. 4 360-degree spinner wheels guarantee a smooth ride. The TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft and a removable, washable laundry bag keeps dirty clothes separate. You listen to this, Ryan? From
yep.
Clean. This is going to London. When I go to Wimbledon with Zach this summer, this is going with me. Both sizes of the carry-on are able to charge all cell phones, tablets, e-readers, and anything else that's powered by a USB cord. A single charge of the Away carry-on will charge your iPhone 5 times. And an added bonus, there's a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, they'll fix or replace it for you for life. Away also offers a 100-day trial. Live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram it. If at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund. No questions asked. Bob, how many times have we wondered if we could just return Lou Pellegrino, our producer? The exact same way. Free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. Away's carry-on sizes are compliant with all major U.S. airlines, and you can maximize the amount you compact. If you're in town, please be sure to visit Away at their retail store in New York City. I'm telling you, this thing is going to be great. Charging cell phones, no dead phones. The material's sleek and ultra durable. Interior design. You know this. Everybody's looking for the perfect over your seat carry-on bag.
No question.
Listen. Our listeners get $20 off a suitcase. All you have to do is go to awaytravel.com/sportsreporters and use promo code sportsreporters during checkout. It's that simple. So again, this is a great buy. So again, $20 off a suitcase by just visiting awaytravel.com/sportsreporters and using promo code sportsreporters during checkout. I feel like that was my party shop, but here is Bob Ryan's.
Oh, those crazy kids at Central Florida are at it again. Now, it's one thing to proclaim yourself national champions in college football, but now AD Danny White and friends have gone so far as to issue championship Super Bowl-style rings to the players. Excuse me, student-athletes. And my favorite part of all this is that the campus police cars now proclaim the Knights as national champs. Check out the side of the police car. Okay, we get it. This is all very cute, but the rest of us must not lose sight of the fact that we do have a process. And in that process, the qualifications of UCF were deemed to be a bit less valid than that of other teams. They weren't snubbed. They didn't quite pass muster, at least in the eyes of the committee. On the other hand, maybe they're onto something. Now, for years, as Michael knows, I've been unjustly denied a Pulitzer Prize. So I'm having a ceremony to proclaim myself a Pulitzer Prize winner. Your invitation is in the mail. Dress casual.
At first, it sounds almost sacrilegious. Do away with the kickoff in NFL games? But the league is seriously considering it in desperate measures to try to minimize concussions, make the game safer, and in a certain way, let's face it, keep its future alive. Research shows that concussions are 5 times more likely to occur during a kickoff than on a normal play from scrimmage. Makes sense. You're giving everyone a running start. But could we really see games that just start at the 25-yard line? Well, why not? I don't have the stats, but between the touchbacks, the balls drilled through the end zone, and the average nothing returns that get you to about the 20 or 25 anyhow, how much difference would there really be? Oh, sure, you'd lose the excitement of the occasional 102-yard return, and you'd lose a chance that one quick score could change any game, and no more of the hook and ladder plays at the end of a game, but it does save, potentially, one NFL player from a concussion or a paralyzing injury. Wouldn't it be worth it? Of course, eliminating the kickoff still leaves the NFL with every other play out there that can cause concussions. And then there's this little thing called the punt. Not so easy to eliminate that one.
Okay, the Warriors aren't going to lose to the Spurs. Maybe this could have been a series, as we talked about before, if the Spurs still had Kawhi and they hadn't been visited by the awful tragedy of the death of Aaron Popovich. But it will be interesting to see what happens before Steph Curry does get back, if they get challenged for more than a game the way the Spurs challenged them on Sunday. That means Kevin Durant, in the short run, will have to win a hard playoff series without a wingman like Russell Westbrook or Steph Curry. Listen, I love Durant's game. I wrote and said last year that he played so well in the NBA Finals that it was if an already great team had added Michael Jordan. He really was that good. But in the short run, again, until Steph gets back, he'll be asked to carry a team the way Michael did at this time of the year and the way LeBron has done pretty much his whole life. Be interesting to watch. Thank you for listening to this Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. Oh, my God. It's so much fun after a weekend of basketball like this to know that Bobby and Mitch and I are going to be on Monday and kick it around. On Friday, we will be back to kick around Ryan's favorite night of the entire... Is it not your favorite? It's like New Year's Eve and Christmas for Bob Ryan.
Yeah, something like that.
The NFL draft. So listen, keep downloading, subscribing. Go to the comments section. We read them. We take them to heart. And we'll talk to you on Friday, everybody.